Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you're joining us on a regular basis, I'm your host, Ronald Bethea, and today's date is May 4th in the year 2022. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar design, EV charge, EV manufacturing, installation, development, and other African-American-owned renewable energy companies, which address the economic effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, also to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the African-American community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You also know that this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSFH, HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at Positive Change, P as in Paul, C as in Cat.com. That's PositiveChangePC.com. Stroll right over to our GoFundMe link, and you will see information on this exciting platform, Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And it lays out the goals and our mission for this platform. And I think you'll find it very educational and very informative. Now, this show is also brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and you can get more information on that organization by logging on to blacksinsolar.org. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have any scheduled guests today for the show, but we have a very, very important subject matter that we're going to be discussing. And we're going to be listening to some very important people. Now, this particular subject matter this morning is called Making Connections, How to Get Transmissions Built for an Advanced Energy Economy. And this particular piece was done by Advanced Energy Economy, which is a think policy think tank located here in Washington, D.C. This piece was put together by Mr. Jeffrey Dennis, who's the executive director over at AEE. They do an excellent job in what they do. So without further ado this morning, we're going to jump right on into this particular webinar.
Let's go ahead and get started. We have a full agenda today. Good afternoon and good morning, depending on where you are. Welcome to our webinar today, Making Connections, How to Get Transmission Built for an Advanced Energy Economy. I am Jeff Dennis, General Counsel and Managing Director at Advanced Energy Economy, and I will be moderating both our keynote presentation and the panel that follows today. Just a few notes for the audience. Questions can be submitted via the Q&A feature at the bottom of the Zoom screen. This session will be recorded and available for download along with a slide deck within 24 to 48 hours. You'll be notified by email, participants, both if you logged in live or if you weren't able to log in live. And a download link will be available online on our website at www.ace.net. So to introduce our topic today, the nation faces an increasingly urgent need to deploy fast, new supplies of advanced energy technology. We need to do that to meet the binding requirements of state law, to power the transportation and building sectors with clean electricity in line with the objectives of state law and local governments and consumers, and to achieve true energy independence to reduce our reliance on volatile global like gas, oil, and coal. Expanding the nation's electric transmission infrastructure, the long-distance high-voltage lines that deliver electricity in bulk from generation resources to local distribution network is key to achieving those objectives. Reducing the time and expense of interconnecting new resources to the grid and building out our transmission infrastructure is really now one of the biggest, if not the biggest, barriers to expanding markets for advanced energy technology and customer access to them. Delivering a robust interstate and interregional transmission network that can deliver clean energy from where it is available to where it is needed is also vital to improving system resilience and reliability in the face of extreme weather events, ranging from severe storms to wildfires. Sorry about that. A variety of challenges, of course, have stood in the way of this new transmission, ranging from weak planning processes, disagreements over who will pay the cost of new lines, to local permitting and siting issues. And addressing these challenges will really require policy change at all levels of government, federal, state, local. We'll also require ensuring that we consider all solutions to our clean energy and reliability, including the contributions that distributed energy resources, and demand-side technology. Over the last 18 months, changes in federal policy needed for additional transmission have taken center stage, thanks in large part to our keynote speaker today. Congress passed the Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which includes direct investment. DOE is taking steps to distribute that funding and exercise other authorities that have to spur infrastructure investment. But last month, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, under Chairman Rich Glick's leadership, took perhaps the biggest step so far, issuing a bipartisan notice of proposed rulemaking to update transmission planning and transmission practices for the first time in over 10 years. We're delighted to have the chairman here to share his perspective on how FERC can help to get transmission bills to meet the needs of the Chairman Glick was named by President Biden to be the chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission on January 1st, 2021. He was nominated to the commission by President Trump in August 2017, and confirmed by the U.S. Senate on November 2nd, 2017. Before joining the commission, he was general counsel for the Democrats on the Senate, serving as a senior policy advisor on numerous issues, including electricity and renewables. Prior to that, he was Vice President of Government Affairs for Iberdrola's Renewable Energy, Electric and Gas Utility, and Natural Gas Storage Business. And before that, served as Director of Government Affairs for PM Energy and Pacific. He's also served as Senior advisor to U.S. Senators. Before that, was legislative director and chief counsel, U.S. Senator Gail Bumpers from Arkansas. Chairman Glick, thank you so much for being here. Please take it away.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Really appreciate the invite and really glad to be doing this, participating in this discussion today. I think, you know, and Jeff, that was a very nice introduction. We are in the midst of so many different, so many different issues at FERC. We're really very busy. But at the top of the list, there's a series of issues really related to work that you all do at AEEE. There's so much going on today with the transition to clean energy future and all the new technologies we're talking about, demand response and distributed energy resources and everything else. And we could spend probably days having webinars talking about all these issues that we're all working on together. But today's topic's obviously on transmission. And Jeff, as you mentioned, you know, there is an enormous amount of pent-up demand in this country. There's a lot of discussion throughout the country. I think almost everyone agrees that we need to build out the grid for different reasons. Obviously, accessing remotely located renewable resources, helping states achieve their goals, but also consumers and utilities achieve their clean energy goals and desires. But even beyond that, dealing with extreme weather, we've seen growing instances of extreme weather, the volatility, the ferocity of the weather conditions that we're seeing, and it's not going in the right direction there. It's obviously going to get worse and worse. We need to build a more resilient grid, and that clearly requires additional investment in transmission. We need to build a more reliable grid as well to address a variety of reliability issues and some of the threats that we face with regard to the reliability of the bulk power system. And then, of course, from an economic perspective, just reducing congestion brings enormous amounts of benefits to consumers in terms of accessing cheaper or less costly energy resources. So from FERC's perspective, we're not necessarily pro-technology, anti-technology, or anything like that. But we focus a lot on barriers. Eliminating barriers, in this case, eliminating barriers to transmission development. I think, again, there's a contested that transmission is needed. We set up a process through an advanced notice of proposed rulemaking last year where we asked a whole slew of questions, a very wide variety of questions, but it's a whole series of transmission issues, asking what barriers people see out there and what kind of solutions they would like to see as we move forward with our regulatory process. And that culminated, at least to date, in our first notice of proposal making. We're going to issue a series, hopefully, of proposal rules. I'll get into that more in a second. But our first notice of proposal making focused on transmission planning and cost allocations that are very, very important in terms of the desire of folks to seek a more efficient, a speedier, and hopefully cost-effective process in terms of moving forward with more transmission development. And if I can, just maybe I'll go through and relatively quickly some of the things that we have proposed in this notice of proposal we're making. With regard to planning, I think there was almost all the comments we got from the ANOPR suggested that people believe that the planning process is broken, that we need much more an anticipatory approach with regard to some, especially with regard to bigger transmission projects. Maybe to be more forward-thinking, not necessarily plan transmission every 3 years or so. Try to figure out what's needed in the future. We know essentially where the generation is going. We know in many cases where the generation is located. We need to plan for that on a longer-term basis with a bigger vision. And one of the things that OPR proposes is a 20-year time frame for certain types of long-term, in many cases long-distance, and public policy type-related projects. A 20-year transmission planning process with regard to that. And that, I think, is going to be general support for that part of our proposed rulemaking. The second part of the rulemaking deals with a much more controversial issue, at least in my opinion. That's, of course, cost allocation. That cost allocation has always been a very tricky issue. In many cases, it's deferred or stunted the growth of the transmission development in large part because there are, human nature. Every state wants someone else, another state, to pay for transmission, and we have all certain legal requirements to how we allocate the cost of transmission. And like I said, it's been kind of a mess in some respects. What we've tried to do in this NOPR is try to approach it from a different perspective. We know very much that the states play an important role in a variety of decisions related to transportation development. Certainly the biggest one is on the back end of the process, siting process, transition siting process. Not necessarily bought in, or a series of states are not necessarily bought in to a proposed transmission project because they think their consumers are going to pay too much for the cost of this project. They think that other states are getting away, not paying their fair share of the cost. They're going to be less likely to support that project on the back end. So what we decided to do is provide the states with a greater opportunity to have a role up front. And essentially, under the proposed rule, states would be able, in a planning region, states would be able, to the extent they can agree, on either developing an ex-ante cost allocation methodology that would apply to all the, and these are the long-term 20-year type of projects. That ex-ante methodology would apply to those projects, or if the states decide they can pursue kind of a case-by-case or project-by-project approach in which the states would have to agree, kind of like the state agreement approach that we see sometimes, which can pop up lately in certain circumstances. To the extent the states do not agree, and an agreement is something I think we're going to have to figure out what agreement constitutes. Right now, we leave it up to the region to decide what constitutes an agreement. But to the extent that there is not an agreement, then the cost allocation approach revert back to the current approach under Order 1000, which essentially the region would come up with an ex ante cost allocation approach for this category of projects, the long term bigger type of transmission project. So again, the great hope is there that the states will have, by being able to participate up front in the cost allocation process, they have more buy-in to the process and hopefully more support for the projects on the back end, whether it comes to siting, whatever other regulatory functions that the states perform that might have an impact on whether the transmission project goes forward or not. With regard to the benefits, and that's always a big issue here because we have to make sure that costs are allocated in a manner roughly commensurate with benefits. The NOPR proposes a series of benefits, but it essentially says to the regions, you come up with your own list. Here's some guidance and benefits that we think these types of transmission projects will bring. And I suspect very much so that the regions will, in many cases, defer to the list in the NOPR, but certainly they under the way the NOPR, the planning region would have an opportunity to come up with their own list of benefits as well. With regard to, I wanted to talk about one other issue that's in the proposed rule that I think probably garnered some attention. That is the right of first refusal, the federal right of first refusal. I think many of you, if not all of you, are aware that under Order 1000, FERC established essentially a set of different categories of transmission projects. And for those transmission projects that were planned regionally for the purposes of the cost allocation, there's no longer a federal right of first refusal for those projects. So essentially those particular projects would have to be subject to a competitive bidding process. And the concept's a good one. You know, the idea is that you bring more competition, you lower costs for consumers, make it a fairer process, you might develop projects that maybe have certain qualities that would be a little more creative than you might have. You might have had a situation where the local utility built the project. The problem with that approach, the way I see it, is that by only applying the competitive process that certain types of projects, the ones that are planned for purposes, regionally planned for the first cost allocation, there are a whole variety of other projects out there that are not subject to the competitive process. So, for instance, a utility bill, in terms of local planning, a utility is going to build something like for reliability purposes or because the project itself, the transmission line is being replaced because of, end of life issues or so on. Those types of projects are not such competitive bidding process. So essentially, what I think Order 1000 did, and not intentionally, but was created a kind of a perverse incentive for utilities that don't want to go be subject to the competitive process, that want to build their own transmission, build it, pay for it, earn a rate of return on it. But they are going to build less significant projects in many cases because they'll be able to get out from under the cost of the competitive requirement under Order 1000. So we, in the NOPR, ask a series of questions related to this issue. In particular, say, should we go further? Should we go? Get rid of the provision Order 1000 altogether? They got rid of Order the Federal Right of First Refusal. Should we modify it further? One of the things we did propose in the NOPR itself is to say that if a project is jointly developed So for instance, if a local utility decides to jointly develop and jointly own the project with a municipal utility, a rural electric co-op, or some sort of independent transmission developer, for instance, there are certain examples of that today. To the extent that that project is jointly developed and jointly owned, that project would then have a federal right of first refusal, so it would not be subject to a competitive process. And I think there's some, at FERC, one of the things we've been trying to do is figure out a way to promote jointly developed projects. I think that's one way of doing it. I think that might actually spur it along a little bit by giving the federal role for, authorizing the federal role for it to be used with regard to that type of project. Again, we asked a series of other questions, and it'll be interesting to see how comments would come back. But I would say that I think that we cover a lot of ground in the NOPR. I mentioned just a couple of items, obviously big items. But I would say that we have a long way to go still. And we decided up front, when we asked a series of questions in the NOPR, we asked about a broad variety of transition-related subjects. And after we reviewed the comments, I think we decided it was probably better to break this subject down into a series of different rulemaking processes. Large part because it would probably be very difficult to weigh down, and it would take a lot longer to do one big rulemaking. So we decided to move forward on a separate set of rulemaking. First one being again transmission cost allocation primarily, but we very much are continue to work on other areas. I'm very hopeful that we will be moving forward with hopefully very soon. A couple of the others I wanted to outline are the interconnection process. No doubt about it, the interconnection process is messed up. In many parts of the country, the delays are getting longer. The number of projects in the queue are getting longer. That's obviously stunting the growth of the
but
generation.
But you seem to be aware of who you were
for, including state policymakers, utilities, and consumers. And so we have to figure out a way to promote an expedited process if we're working on a proposed rule that would hopefully do that as well. There are other subjects we didn't address fully. Interregional transmission planning, we got somewhat in this particular NOPR, but in many cases, we kind of left that issue for another rulemaking, and we're sort of working on that as well. Transmission incentives, we have had a variety of proposals that have been pending at the commission for a couple of years regarding the commission incentive authority with regard to setting different types of transmission and setting transmission that achieves certain benefits and so on. And we need to address that, I think, further in terms of finalizing the rule one way or the other, where the transmission incentives. And then finally, cost containment. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars that are going to be invested here, very much needed investments, and in my opinion, will provide more benefits than the cost. But nonetheless, we have to make sure that consumers get the best bang for their buck. So we've scheduled a technical conference, which I think will be for early October, to address this issue further in terms of developing a better record on that issue, and then we might be able to act on some sort of role with regard to that issue down the road after that technical conference. That's been completed in the comments that have been submitted later on. So still a lot of work to be done on transmission, but we're proud that we finally were able to at least get one of the a couple of the major subjects addressed in the first NOPR that we issued a couple weeks ago. I want to go back to the state issue just for a second, because I know that AEE, in addition to doing all the good work you do in Washington, D.C., whether it's before Congress or FERC, I know you have folks that spend a lot of time at the state level as well. And as I mentioned earlier, it's vitally important that the states get on board with this agenda. Now, not every state's the same, and we know that. We know that some states have different agendas in terms of clean energy future and where they see transmission projects going and so on. But if the states are going to be resistant, are going to think that the federal government is too involved, and we're being unfair, and we're shoving costs onto one state versus another state, this process isn't going to work. I mentioned siting as a big example, but states have other abilities as well to prevent their utilities from further developing. But in many cases, most people would believe it's much needed transmission development. So we've been spending a lot of time with the states. We actually formed a joint task force there are 10 state commissioners and all 5 FERC commissioners, and we've had very good discussions so far. We focused primarily on the two major issues I just addressed, which is cost allocation and planning. We're having a third meeting this Friday, actually. It's going to be on the interconnection process, including funding, participant funding, and other areas related to funding or allocating the cost associated with network upgrades. It's going to be a very important discussion, and it'll help inform, I think, the commission's rulemaking, agenda with regard to those issues. And then we're going to have the next meeting, I believe, at the end of July, and it's going to focus, I believe, on interregional transmission planning. So it's vitally important that I think we get the states on board. I think the good work that you all do, I think, support not only in terms of educating state regulators, but working with them on various solutions, I think, will be helpful not only at the state level, but also will help inform and shape our regulatory and rulemaking process. And I look forward to working with the state. So far, they've been very good to work with, and again, I think they've provided a lot of good input that helped us again shape how our first rulemaking went forward. I think that'll be the case in the future as well. So with that, I know that time's kind of short, but Jeff, I'm more than glad to answer any questions anyone might have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. We do have a few questions. I will start with one of my own, maybe just to pick up there where you left off on the role of the state. You mentioned obviously the what's in the NOPR regarding, you know, the proposals to give states a role in regional cost allocation determination. You mentioned the task force as well. And you also mentioned that certainly the NOPR leaves open some questions about, you know, what will constitute state agreement and things like that. How do you see those discussions moving forward, particularly with the states, perhaps nail down some of those details? And do you think that there are ways in which the advanced energy industry and folks who are, looking to see transmissions develop to meet some of those goals I talked about earlier should be thinking about working with the states?
So a couple of things, one of which I think is very important for everyone to submit, you know, the comments on the NOPR and initial comments and the reply comments. But also, I think, as you said, I think the states are thinking about, they're going to have, I'm sure NARIC will have comments, but individual states will have comments as well. And I think this is the time to get in to see the state regulators and help shape their comments. I think I know AE works with a number of states, that, and some states are looking for significant new investments in transmission, I think, to be able to help them figure that out. We decided to kind of leave the issue up to the regions for now, but I have to be honest, personally, it's not completely satisfying not to know what 50% votes constitute an agreement, is 80%. You look at the way SPP does it, you look at the way MISO does it. So I think we need to, that needs to be fleshed out a little bit. So I think working with the states up front before they submit their comments to the commission side would be very helpful.
Thank you. That's really helpful advice. You know, in terms of bringing other, you know, bringing the states into the planning process, we did get one question as well, which asked how you might envision Native American tribes and tribal government coming into this process and perhaps what their role would be in the rulemaking. I know the commission has done a lot to improve consultation with tribal governments in other areas too. So I wonder, if that's something that you're working on with regard to transition.
It's a great question, and you're exactly right, Jeff. We've been spending a lot of time lately, over the last year or so in particular, working with our new Office of Public Participation, but also our Office of External Affairs, and having a series of meetings with tribes, thinking about how can we better reach out to tribes, not only to have them participate as stakeholders, but even more importantly, they're not just stakeholders, they're governmental entities. We need to figure out a way to have them involved with governmental entities. And I think what we did in the NOPR, and I'm just going to speak for myself here, is we rarely focus a lot on state regulators because most of the jurisdictional assets that we look at are subject to states. They're owned by entities that are subject to state regulation. But there's also municipal utilities, there's also rural electric co-ops, and tribes, as you mentioned, that also need to have a say as well in both the planning process and the cost allocation process. And I suspect we're going to get a lot of comments on that. We're going to need to think that through a little bit.
Another question that we got dives actually a little more into the specifics of what the commission has proposed in the rule around forward-looking planning, the 20-year planning process. Can you speak just a little bit more to what that means in terms of the 20-year planning process? Is, you know, start planning now, and in 20 years, hopefully we're building, or is it something different?
Yeah, I was at a different meeting this morning. Someone mentioned, oh, well, we'll have a transmission in 20 years. That's not the way I look at it at all. It's just a transmission plan over 20 years, but hopefully that will identify transmission projects that are needed much sooner, and I think will be hopefully develop much sooner as well. I think that, as I remember, and I'm trying to remember all the details of our notebook, but basically we require essentially several different probabilistic assessments to essentially just, you know, because obviously 20 years is a pretty long time horizon. You're going to have to figure out, you're not going to be 100% accurate in terms of what you're predicting the situation to look at, like, but we require different probabilistic assessments. And not only that, we require a relook, I believe, every 3 years. So the process will be a continuing process. We're not just going to sit around and see what happens in 20 years. But I think by looking where we might be needed in 20 years, you can start thinking about a project that will provide some benefits now and a bunch of additional benefits down the road as well. And I think that will help develop projects much sooner rather than later.
One last question for you, and we appreciate your time today. And that's around sort of transparency around the planning process, around insurance requirements. I think, you know, it's one thing to establish good planning requirements that are forward-looking to take into account all those drivers of transition needs that we talked about. But one of the lessons of Order 1000, at least I think, speaking for me personally, is that it's another thing to ensure that there's accountability for carrying out those kinds. You know, in your advance notice of proposed rulemaking, you certainly have some questions about an independent transmission monitor and other things like that. Curious how you're thinking about that now, if there's anything you can say about what you think the role is of transparency and accountability.
So, as I mentioned earlier, we have more to do. We have several additional rulemakings down the road. I'm just going to give you my personal view. This is not necessarily, I can't say this is a commission view or not, but I believe that there might be a need for an independent transmission monitor. I think there's on the power side, on the market side, I think there's been a lot of benefits to have the IMM, various large deals around the country. But I think, to me, that's probably better addressed in the cost containment section of the process. We did talk about it here a little bit, but we thought that we punted on that issue and decided it would be better addressed down the road. I don't know where the votes might lie on that, but I will say that I tend to think there might be some benefits to that.
Thanks very much. And actually, we've got one more minute. I'm going to ask one last question that came through that's always top of mind for us at AEE, and that's, how important do you think further market integration, such as, you know, for broader wholesale power markets in regions of the country that don't have them, to underpin the planning process and make more explicit the business case to regional transmission? How important do you think that is?
So, you know, the Order 1000 required regional transmission planning around the country, but if you look at where these projects and then the projects that are, you know, planned for cost allocation purposes, I think they've all been in RTOs around the country. I don't believe there's been one outside of that so far. So it goes to show you that it's probably easier to do for a variety of different reasons in RTOs. I personally believe there's a whole variety of benefits, whether it be reliability, resilience, cost to development, especially in the West. In the West, I think they're seeing some of the issues that have arisen recently. I think they'd be better addressed with a regional, or some sort of formalized regional market. I know there's a lot of discussions going on in the region about that. I would just say, I think that one of the other benefits of having an RTO or some sort of organized market is you'd have, a better planning process.
Chairman Glick, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. It's actually a great segue to our panel discussion. So,
ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Making Connections, How to Get Transmissions Built for an Advanced Energy Economy, here on the platform of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. You are listening to the Honorable Richard Glick, who is the chairman of the Federal Regulatory Commission here in Washington, D.C. He was appointed by President Biden in January of 2021, and you are listening to Mr. Jeff Dennis, who is the senior director for the Advancement Energy Economy. They are doing an excellent job breaking down this. We're going to take a slight pause for the calls here on Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America, because we always have to remember what? That this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that the slogan for this show, which is being heard over the platform of Blog Talk Radio, we are streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and we can be heard over iTunes, and we will be moving to our new YouTube TV broadcast in the next, hopefully, 90 days. We've been working on this for quite some time, and we hope to see this come to fruition. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar design, EV charge, EV manufacturing, installation, workforce development, and other African-American renewable energy companies to address the high effects of energy at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the African-American community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you also know this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to positivechangepc.com. Go over to our GoFundMe link, and you'll find that information there. Also, this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which yours truly, I am still presently serving as this sitting president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar. And we have been working very diligently to get some things done locally and nationally here around these issues affecting the African-American communities across the United States of America. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go back to our show. We just have to take a always pause to let people know that this show is being brought to you by, once again, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC. And we're going to move right back to Making Connections, How to Get Transmissions Built for the Advanced Energy Economy.
Okay. Thank you again for giving us so much time.
Thanks for inviting me.
Terrific. Well, let's start our panel discussion. The chairman gave us a terrific overview of what is happening at the federal level and at the federal state. We'll continue that discussion during our panel, but we also want to turn our focus a little bit to what needs to happen in the state to get a transmission bill for advanced. State and local communities are playing a critical role in ensuring the transmission. Chairman talked about at the front, states really are the ultimate deciders in a lot of cases. And we can't forget about local communities because they host the transmission. We have to ensure that we're meeting their needs. And so our panel is going to touch on a lot of these issues, as well as we got a lot of questions in the chat about advanced technologies, grid advanced technologies. Our panel is going to cover some of that as well. But we're going to start with perspectives from the West, where AEP and our member companies are critical successes in engaging with state and local communities to advance critical projects. And to lead off that discussion, I'd like to introduce Sarah Webster. She's the Senior Vice President of External Affairs and Market Development for Pattern Energy. She oversees all of Pattern's government relations at the state, provincial, and federal level, and is also responsible for corporate, including media, branding, and corporate social responsibility. She's been with Pattern since 2013. She's worked in the energy sector for nearly 20 years, and has also worked, interestingly, as a music critic for the Houston Press, which is definitely a master about the time we're together in person. But Sara, please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Jeff, and thank you everyone for sharing your time with us today on this topic, which everyone on this panel can officially call themselves nerds about, right? We're various levels of power nerds, energy nerds, transmission nerds, and we're just so grateful to be with our people. So I am in my home office, so apologies if you hear cats or construction or anything like that. It's the COVID has broken down the barriers in our life. So if you see my cat, say hi. So let's go ahead on to the first slide, and I'll just give a little introduction to pattern and of what Jeff said about what we're doing in the West. Chairman Glick is doing, as Jeff said, Herculean things with the FERC issue there in terms of trying to break down two of what people in transmission typically consider the three thorniest issues. Obviously, there's regional planning, there's cost allocation, and they're taking those head-on in this most recent NOPR. And the third one is siting, and that's one that we on the development side have to be very thoughtful about and navigate every single day. And just to offer a little context as we get into the transition discussion, let me step back for one moment as we think about siting and activity in the West, which is the Natural Gas Act. Was the first act of Congress in the United States of America to regulate the growing natural gas industry. And it gave FERC's predecessor the authority to regulate natural gas pipelines, and that included citing an eminent domain condemnation rights. That was passed in 1938. So I just bring that up as a point of reference because we are working in a world as we work to decarbonize the electricity system and do it in a way that saves consumers money and maintains or enhances system reliability. We're working in a world and in market dynamics that were constructed for fossil attributes. And that's not a good or bad thing necessarily. It's a historic fact. And so a lot of what we're doing is trying to bring in the convergence of what were new technologies, now well-established technologies, into markets, regulatory regimes, and infrastructure, right? We're California-based, homegrown, pure 100% renewable energy company. We do utility-scale wind, solar, storage, and transmission. We are a U.S. company. We're based in San Francisco, California. And as you'll see on this slide, we have a significant operating footprint in New Mexico. And one of the natural questions there is why. And the reason is I've spent 23 years in the power sector. I spent the first 10 years in natural gas and conventional. I spent the past 13 in renewables. And before I joined renewables, I didn't realize that different wind regimes have different personalities. They're like people. They have different shapes and profiles and behaviors. Well, when California moved when the signals were that California was going to be pushing through the historic barrier of a 50% renewable portfolio standard, we paid attention. We understood the politics in the state. We believed, we had conviction this was going to happen and could happen with the technology in a reliable and cost-effective way. And we realized the in-state build in California is largely solar. So you have a lot of solar resource here in the state. You have some good wind, but most of it has been built out or otherwise constrained for siting reasons. So you get this huge, huge production of solar in the middle of the day. Well, one of the amazing things about New Mexican wind in the east of the state is that its profile is that it blows in the morning and the night. So if you want to green the night in California, you need a product that complements the shape of the solar. And that's a very important idea that leads to why transmission is critical. If you want to run a grid on technologies that are reliant on the weather, that's fine. You can do it in a cost-effective and fully reliable way, but you need a grid that's bigger than the weather, which means you need an interconnected grid. You need the hydro coming in from the Pacific Northwest. You need the wind coming in from the eastern states. You need the solar that you see in Nevada and California. When you put those all together with some storage and some natural gas for firming and shaping, you've got a really reliable baseload type product, energy product, that you can use to run the grid. So we took a development project that had been long overdue. It had been germinating for some time, which is the Western Spirit Project. and we took 1,050 megawatts of wind in eastern New Mexico, and we connected it by 155-mile T-line into the California system. We do also serve native load in New Mexico as well. But a big part of our offtake, as I mentioned, is meeting California's needs. Again, a regional footprint, when you think about it. You can't have that regional footprint without transmission. So that is us in New Mexico. And if we switch to the other thing I'll say is we commissioned that at the end of last year. It was the, still is, the largest renewable energy project ever developed and commissioned in the Americas, which is very, very cool. But that is a down payment. That is 1,000 megawatts and a 155-mile T line. That is a down payment on what we are currently working on with our partners, and that is the Sandia Wind Complex. That's 3,000 megawatts of wind and over 500 miles of transmission as well. So the stakes are high, and we do have a lot of experience on transmission. So let's go to the next slide if we can see it.
They don't right. seem to know.
So let's talk about the barriers to transmission for a moment.
Well, when I look around,
that's a conversation that could last a long time.
He was on.
I saw in the chat that question about 20 years. Transmission is not for the faint of heart. Long haul transmission, high voltage transmission takes a long time. It takes patient money. It takes long term planning. And it takes a deep engagement with many, many regulatory bodies, but also stakeholders. Because unlike with natural gas pipelines, there is no Natural Gas Act for transmission. Because renewable technologies have emerged really in a commercial way in the past 20 years, we don't have as refined of a regulatory regime overseeing them yet. So it's a bit of a patchwork quilt of you know, many, many laws that were intended originally for other technologies. And that leaves us with a very big reality that if you're doing a 100-mile T-line or a 500-mile T-line, pretty much anyone can stop it. You have local jurisdictions, county jurisdictions, state jurisdictions, and you don't typically have combination rights, eminent domain rights. Now, that is not a term I use lightly. I know it's very fraught, and although we do believe in the interest of public good, there's a time and place for eminent domain, it should be an activity of last resort. And so when we looked at New Mexico, the leadership in New Mexico years and years ago had the vision to put in place a small agency called the Renewable Energy Transmission Authority. And it then went fallow for some time. It was on the books, it was legitimate in there, but it was largely unfunded and certainly not utilized. So in partnership with RITA, we developed and commercialized the Western Spirit Line, which we then sold to PNM, the utility in the state. And RITA was a critical, critical partner. Chairman Glick talked about what people can do on the federal level and what developments are happening there. But it is absolutely critical that the state continue, as Jeff said, to meet the Fed pathway to understand what transmission can mean, what grid reliability and deployment of renewable decarbonization can mean, and for their voters and their citizens, and take steps to support or even promote the economic development that is associated with transmission. So New Mexico is one of the leaders in this, and we are so grateful to the state and to the officials who run and work at the Renewable Energy Transmission Authority. We could not have gotten this project done without that. And I raise this, and I don't want to overly belabor the point, but we are starting to see other states pick this up. So last session, we saw Colorado pass the Colorado Energy Transmission Authority with the leadership of State Senator Chris Hansen. We're seeing some legislation in California.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Making Connections, How to Get Transmissions Built for an Advanced Energy Economy. You'll be able to hear this webinar in its entirety by logging on to positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. You know I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you're on the platform of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I don't know any place else where you'll get this type of energy, education, information directly from the policymakers who make the decisions here in Washington, D.C., that impacts your life, other than this platform, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, as we are trying to speak to the African American community. I don't have a problem with that. I'm speaking to 40 million of my folk over this platform. These may not sound like us and it's not us, but these are the people who are making the decisions about energy. And as I say to you on this platform, everything starts with energy and everything ends with energy. Now, we're going to take what we are going to switch gears a little because we've got a few more minutes for this platform, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. But you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you know that the call-in number for this show is 646-668-2948. Once again, the call-in number for this show is 646-668-2948. We're shifting gears now. We're going to look at Montgomery County improves and expands commercial pace. Now, I've had the privilege of having the director of the Montgomery County Green Bank on this platform numerous times, and they keep me sort of in the loop with what they're doing because I get the Montgomery County Green Bank online newsletter. And it's an excellent piece. The Montgomery County Council unanimously passed the commercial property assessed clean energy commercial pace financing agreement legislative bill 46-21 that significantly improves and expands commercial pace financing opportunities. With this new legislative, property owners have the opportunity to make their buildings more climate resilient and energy efficient to help improve operating costs and reduce green gas emissions. The bill extends C-PACE project eligibility to include climate resilient, climate adoption, water conservation, environmental health, and safety upgrades. This new legislation proves and increases in loan-to-value ratios, thus allowing the property owners to go deeper into affordable financing opportunities. Bill 46-21 makes Montgomery County one of the best markets for climate investing. Now, you can read more of the press release there, and it lays out everything that they're doing with Montgomery County with this piece. It's an excellent article, and they asked for to share their story. So we share their story here on this platform, Solar Now and the Future with this economic impact on Black America, and that gentleman's name is Mr. Tom Deyo, D-E-Y-E-O, who's director of the Green Bank, and they do an outstanding job in Montgomery County, Maryland, here in my residential state that I reside in for the last 20 years. But my home is South Carolina. As I always tell everybody, they call me South of the Border. So I hail from Dillon, South Carolina. So that's home for me. And we're working on some issues there. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to bring some folks to to this platform in the very near future to sort of discuss some of the issues that is impacting the environment with a new, not new, because they've been working on it the last 30 years. It's called Interstate I-73, but issues facing Marlboro County, Dillon County, Marion County, and Orie County as it relates to getting that interstate highway finished as it hits the South Carolina line and has to go through those counties in order for this, the only national seashore resort, which has a $10 billion annual impact on the state of South Carolina's GNP, is not connected by a major interstate. And it's the purposes of government investing this. But when it gets to Marlboro County, there is no tax base because they don't have enough residents in the county. They have less than 28,000 people. They can't come up with their portion of the county funding to match the federal funding to pay for paving the highway. Same is the issue in Dillon County. In Dillon County, I-95 will cross and intersect I-73, and there's no plan to build an interconnect and off-ramps in Marlboro, Dillon, or Marion County before it hits Orie County. And that's a deal breaker. So we need to have that discussion on this platform because there are tremendous renewable energy opportunities there in those market demographics with the support of the business sector and the colleges and universities, which we've been trying to gather, and people don't seem to like to understand. Climate change is real. And if we don't come together, everybody's going to need a boat. So I'm going to get back to you on this topic matter because we are getting ready to close. And you'll be able to get all that information on the Montgomery County Green Bank, as well as you'll be able to listen to the complete webinar, because we're only about halfway through, on that we brought that information to you. Making connections on how to get transmissions built for an advanced energy economy here on the platform of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. So as we close another exciting edition, we don't want you to meet us back here. We want you to beat us back here as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. So until next week, we say go in peace. I hear the someone singing. I can tell. Sing it. I hear the someone singing. Why don't you? In the palm of your hand, use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Singing, I got you. Sing it.